Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Through proper deliberation, one should give up attraction to his wife's body, because that body will ultimately be transformed into small insects, stool or ashes. What is the value of this insignificant body? How much greater is the Supreme Being, who is all-pervading like the sky? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Here also the same point is stressed. One should give up attachment for his wife, or in other words, for sex life. If one is intelligent, he can think of his wife's body as nothing but a lump of matter that will ultimately be transformed into small insects, stool or ashes. In different societies, there are different ways of dealing with the human body at the time of the funeral ceremony. In some societies, the body is given to the vultures to be eaten, and therefore the body ultimately turns into vulture stool. Sometimes the body is merely abandoned, and in that case the body is consumed by small insects. In some societies, the body is immediately burned after death, and thus it becomes ashes. In any case, if one intelligently considers the constitution of the body and the soul beyond it, what is the value of the body? Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai. Antavanta ime deha nityasyokta sharirenah. The body may perish at any moment, but the soul is eternal. If one gives up attachment for the body and increases his attachment for the spirit soul, his life is successful. It is merely a matter of deliberation. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om again. So this section of the Bhagavatam is providing some of the core verses of our philosophy. These are the essential components of philosophy that every devotee already knows. Actually, in general, most devotees hear these things quite a long time before they actually read them in the Bhagavatam. Because they are such fundamental aspects of our philosophy that this is also shown by the fact that they are repeated in a number of places, continuously repeated in the Bhagavatam actually. Every time a great discourse takes place between Krishna and his devotees, or perhaps a great devotee and a devotee who is inquiring from that devotee, at some point during that conversation, this aspect is there, that some real essential philosophy relating to the difference between the body and the soul is always given. Of course, we have this right from the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, from chapter 2. Several verses are there describing the difference between the body and the soul, how the body is subject to being vanquished, but the soul is immutable, cannot be destroyed. One should not lament for the body. One should not lament for the soul. All these different descriptions are given. One should act in a way so as to prioritize the functions of the soul and to neglect as much as possible the demands of the body. So this is very essential philosophy. And here Narad Muni is instructing this to Yudhishthira Maharaj. This conversation takes place at the Rajasuya sacrifice. And it's being narrated as part of the Bhagavatam, as part of the flow of the Bhagavatam, leading on from the end of the sixth canto. In the sixth canto it was described, different narrations were given of Chitraketu, Vritrasur. And the question was asked by Maharaj Parikshit as to how it is that the Lord can maintain his status as being impartial despite seemingly being partial to all these different individuals. And so in that connection, Shukadeva Goswami recites this account of Yudhishthira Maharaj being spoken to by Narad Muni at the Rajasuya sacrifice, because he deals very carefully with this pastime of Prahlad Maharaj. And in this pastime of Prahlad Maharaj, you get a full display of the Lord favoring a devotee. But one also gets to understand some of the reasons for why the Lord favors devotees, or seemingly favors devotees. Because this can be a source of confusion. Certainly Maharaj Parikshit was honest enough to explain that confusion. We hear that the Lord is impartial. Whoever surrenders to him, the Lord rewards them accordingly. Yet we see at some times the Lord acts so as to put down the demons, to act against their favor, to act to disrupt their sacrifices, their attempts to rise to power. And at other times, even if the demigods do some nonsense, the Lord somehow pops up to rescue them from their tribulations. So this was a great source of confusion. Yet you see that even in the attempt to answer this question, this essential philosophy still comes out. And we can get a clear idea that this philosophy is very, very essential, however unpalatable it may seem. Now, in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, Chitraketu Maharaj, the great saint Narad, also went to see Chitraketu Maharaj and Angira. Angira Rishi and Narad Muni. They both visited Chitraketu Maharaj at a time when King Chitraketu was almost drowning in an ocean of lamentation. If you remember, the pastime was that Chitraketu had 10 million wives, and he was trying to produce a son because he wanted to hand over the responsibilities of the kingdom to an heir. However, no son was coming. And so Chitraketu, at that time when the sages arrived, he was almost drowning in an ocean of lamentation. He was practically dead. He didn't know what to do. Yet when the sages arrived, he welcomed them nicely. He respectfully received them. And they detected that something is not right with this person. And so they asked him, what is wrong? And they described, if a king is happy when his subordinates are in order, when he has a good treasury, when his fighting forces are strong, yet you seem miserable, what is wrong? And he explained that, I am desperate to have a son, and despite all my attempts, I have failed. So now later it transpires, as the story goes on, that of course the sages, they bless him to have a son, but he gets a son who will be both the cause of misery and distress. And only after the distress takes place do they again get to see Narad Muni. And at that time, he explains that, formerly I could have instructed you in spiritual subject matters, but you were completely not ready to hear them. Your mind, your consciousness was set in a completely different way. You were completely unfit to hear the type of philosophy that's being described here, because it wouldn't have gone in. It would have just been ignored by you. Your sole goal in life was to have a child and execute your duties as a king. Now, where else do we see this happening? That a devotee rejects higher spiritual instructions in favor of a specific goal they have in mind. Initially. In the fourth canto, Dhruva Maharaj. Yes, exactly. Although some very nice words were spoken to him, he said, I don't care for these instructions. Of course, Narad Muni tried to dissuade him, to send him home, when Dhruva Maharaj first went to the forest. But he was so fixed on that instruction. Of course, for a child to go home to be cultivated nicely is the right thing to do. It is actually the normal way by which they would become spiritually advanced. They would be raised in Krishna consciousness at home by the parents. So that for a normal boy would have been the right way to advance spiritually. But Dhruva Maharaj's goal, his goal was to obtain a kingdom greater than any he had had before. So he ignored that. In a sense, it was like a test. So he passed that test. And he went ahead and engaged in a specific activity for the purpose of achieving his goal. Now, he had not really thought carefully about the goal. And this becomes clear when, after achieving his goal, after getting the darshan of the Lord and receiving his benedictions, he then says to the Lord, my dear Lord, everything I've wished for is like bits of broken glass. You could have asked me, I could have asked you for something so much more valuable, the privilege of devotional service. Yet now I have to suffer the austerities of you having fulfilled my desire and me having to stay for another 30,000 years on a planet amidst all opulence. So Dhruva Maharaj regrets that desire of his. Yet at that time, Narad Muni did not instruct him in the deep science about the soul. That came later. So Chitraketu Maharaj had a similar circumstance. He had something immediate that needed fulfilled. And at a certain time he became receptive when his material attempt failed. And the son died. His attempt failed, and again he was begging the sadhus, now what to do? What is this that's going on? And when he became a little inquisitive, the sadhus were able to instruct him in real spiritual subject matter. So now verses like this, and this whole chapter contains a strong series of verses aimed at answering the initial question, which was, how can a family man remain Krishna conscious? I'll just read the exact thing. O my Lord, O great sage, kindly explain how we who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life may also easily attain liberation according to the instructions of the Vedas. So this was a very pertinent question for pretty much most people in this world. Most people in this world are living in family life without knowledge of the goal of life. And they're very much bewildered by that. So such information is essential. So Narad Muni goes through a whole series describing the futility of being attached to the body, the futility of thinking that the body is the all in all, and the futility of engaging in activities simply for the satisfaction of the body. A similar discourse takes place between Lord Rishabhdev and his sons in the previous canto. And in that, Lord Rishabhdev, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, instructs his sons in actually the real aim of life. He speaks many nice verses. And because this verse is specifically focused on the attraction between the attraction a man has for the wife's body, Rishabhdev also speaks a few verses regarding that. Pumsa striya mithuni bhavametam tayor mithoridaya granti mahu ato griha kshetra sutapta vitari janasya moho yamahamameti. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, one increases one's attachments, griha kshetra sutta, one's place of residence, one's relatives, one's occupation, one's wealth, vitair. And under the influence of this illusion, he starts to think in terms of I, me, and mine. So now this is, of course, a very basic, essential verse that everyone has heard, probably repeated many times in class. Because it defines the actual essence, the essential principle of this world. This whole world, this whole manifestation is running on the basis of sex life. And it has been designed to do that. Why? Because we wanted it. It is there, by the Lord's arrangement, through the agency of Durga Devi, to give us a wonderful opportunity to completely forget the Supreme Lord. And it's a very it's a very tragic situation, because under the influence of this moha, this I, me, and mine, we engage in many different sinful activities. Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma. Yad indriya pritaya apranoti. Now, in this verse, what is explained is that when one considers sense gratification to be the aim of life, one engages in materialistic living and automatically commits many sinful activities. Now, just think about that sequence. When one considers sense gratification to be the aim of life, one becomes mad after materialistic living. Pramatta becomes mad and engages in sinful activities. Nunam pramatta kurute vikarma yat indriya pritaya apranoti na sadhu manye yata atmanoyam asan apikleshada ashadeya. Therefore, I do not think it befitting an intelligent person to engage himself again in the activities of sense gratification, by which he repeatedly obtains material bodies one after the other. In the verse, it is also mentioned how the material body is the source of a person's misery. But he has forgotten this. But it has been awarded to him for sense gratification. So we have desired that sense gratification. And the body has been awarded to us by the mercy of the Lord for us to fulfill our desires. Now, it's not awarded blindly. It is awarded under the Lord's superintendence. It is awarded in accordance with our karma, in accordance with the Lord's supervision. And it is given for us to enact certain propensities, desires that we have. Of course, the problem is that once we get the first body, a whole sequence of entanglement is set off. And that some innocent actions that we do in a particular birth, they will lead to some karmic consequence. It may be good results even. However, the whole sequence serves to entrap us more and more. And at some distance down the chain, we are so heavily controlled and heavily entangled in this whole intricate web that is woven that we don't know how to get out of it. So therefore the sages, therefore Rishabhdev explains that an intelligent person does not again engage himself in the very same activities chewing the chewed that got him into the predicament in the first place. No one likes trouble and suffering. Actually, you will see in material society tries to conduct itself to mitigate suffering, pain. If you visit a hospital, I've been visiting hospitals regularly for the last couple of months now, you will see a whole elaborate arrangement made for preserving people's bodies. And it is a very impressive, meticulous, well-made arrangement. And it is definitely of value in terms of preserving the body. However, it does not do anything beyond the body. Yes, the body is preserved. One has a healthy body. However, the scriptural injunction is that one should desire only a healthy body or self-preservation. Nothing else should be the goal of one's works. Why is that? Narad Muni also explained earlier that in the conduct of one's activities, one should take one's particular quota. One should endeavor for those essential necessities of life and should not endeavor for those which are beyond that. If one endeavors for something which is beyond necessity, then one starts to become entrapped in karma. Of course, sometimes in the fulfillment of necessity also, one becomes entrapped. But at least if something is necessary, you have no choice. You have to do it. It is just part and parcel of the bargain of being in this world. So given that it is a bad bargain to come to this world, should we increase the negativity of the bargain by engaging in those activities more and more? So that is really the essence of the message coming from here. Now that specific message, as I mentioned earlier, has to be given in the right packaging to the right person. Generally, if someone goes out onto the street and tells people that their wife's body is going to be turned into small insect stool or ashes, and therefore they should forget about it and instead contemplate the greatness of the Supreme Being who is all-pervading like the sky, the reaction you get might not be the one you want. And we can look at the example of the great preachers like Narad Muni, who judge when a person is ready to receive this message. Most people, sometimes even devotees, when they hear strong verses like this, even they feel a little discomfort. But that's good. When a devotee feels discomfort upon reading the Bhagavatam, it means that something within them is being challenged. And that is the entire purpose of the Bhagavatam. Of course, if you give someone too strong a dose of medicine, they may not be able to take it, and it may be too much for them. So therefore, a situation always needs to be cultivated and created whereby someone becomes ready to accept that medicine. And this purport is very interesting because it's specifically speaking about, well, men giving up attraction for the wife's body, but it also hints at perhaps a deeper meaning to this. Prabhupada says the same point is stressed, that one should give up attachment for his wife, or in other words, for sex life. So actually, that is the real principle that one should be giving up attraction for. Everyone becomes attracted to something or else, something or other in this material world. And at least the fact that someone is being instructed to give up attraction to the wife's body means that that attraction had been there in the first place. And actually, that's the normal order of things. The normal sequence for a healthy society is that, yes, the husband is meant to be attracted to the wife, and yes, a proper ashram, a proper grihastha ashram, and proper other ashrams as well, create a stable framework in society. Sadly, even this little misconception that the husband should be attracted to the wife, ultimately it's a misconception in a spiritual sense. But in another sense, in terms of a society functioning, it is necessary. Prabhupada says when a couple get married, the husband looks at the wife and thinks, this is the most beautiful person. So whether she actually is or not, the husband needs to think like that, or he's expected to. at least in the beginning. Certainly, generally, the wife will tell him he needs to, if it's not the case. But that's the normal sequence. Yes, there is supposed to be some attraction, because after all, two people do not get married because the souls are attracted. Right? The spirit soul is the spirit soul. The attraction, people get married because there are two different bodies and two different subtle bodies. It is compatibility is not based on compatibility of the soul. At least it was previously a foregone conclusion that marriage would take place at least between opposite sex. At least on bodily consideration, that was a basic requirement. Now even that's being challenged to some extent. But then compatibility is largely determined not so much based on bodily attraction. Bodily attraction may be some factor, but the mental, intellectual, and level of the ego, specifically, which is determined by one's varna and ashram, those would also be very important factors in determining suitability. That is why, generally, or at least traditionally, the two persons themselves would not do the job of matching themselves up, because they wouldn't consider the subtle body. Because the subtle body's effects come in a lot later often. Often the initial attraction is to the externals. Of course some interaction is there, and that is also part of the subtle body. But the real nature of the subtle body comes out a long time later. Therefore the best people to make those decisions, at least I'm speaking traditionally, I'm not saying this is the right thing necessarily to apply in every situation today, but at least traditionally, the parents who have been experiencing the child's subtle body for years, 15, 20 years, and parents from both sides are better suited, are in a better position to come together and discuss whether that is a good match. So now that obviously is a regulation for the mass of people who are going through progressing in life to ultimate spiritual success. So while one is in that situation, one needs to be in that consciousness to some extent. That itself is a basic requirement for a stable society in the world. At least that this attraction for illicit sex should be given up. Of course, we all are expected to follow the four eggs: no meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. And generally, most people will have the most difficulty with which one? Which one is the most challenging for devotees generally? Most people will say it's illicit sex. I mean, meat eating, yes. Generally, most devotees, once they've stopped eating meat, they understand how dreadful it is. They will not generally go back to doing that, because they know it's such a nasty thing to do. Gambling, well, for many people, it's not such an essential part of their life. And I don't know, there may be some real hardcore gamblers who cannot resist, but generally it doesn't happen. Intoxication also, people know the negative effects of intoxication. Many people will have experienced it before coming to Krishna consciousness. They know that ultimately nothing good came from it. They had to put themselves into a mental situation just to think that what they were drinking was actually nice, even though their initial reaction was, oh, this is disgusting. So generally people won't do that, but sometimes of course the modes cause one to revert back and they get back into that. But illicit sex seems a very innocent thing. It seems very harmless. I mean, I'm not doing any harm to anyone else. Gambling is destructive. Intoxication is destructive in society. Meat eating is destructive. But illicit sex is not destructive. But actually it is. Because it is the root cause of our stay here in this material world. It is the root, fundamental, overall cause. Which is why when great instructions are given, this strong principle is always brought out. Now we have, generally we see that Narad Muni preaches, he preaches to different kings in the Bhagavatam, different kings, those who are aspiring to become Raja Rishis. And he instructs them in different ways. King Prachinabari, he narrates the story of Puranjan to him, in an effort to disentangle him from material bondage. Now in the example of Maharaj Priyavrat, we see something slightly different. That Maharaj Priyavrat already had great training from Narad Muni. And he was firmly fixed in renunciation. anyone who has had some preaching from Narad Muni becomes a staunch devotee if they submissively accept it. Such is the potency of Narad Muni. He was given his Veena by Lord Krishna. It's described in Canto 1. And since then he travels around the world, assisted by the curse of Daksha, where he cannot stay for more than 3 days. And he travels enlightening everyone. And he manages to assist and help so many people in the course of those travels. And if anyone has been on the receiving end of Narad Muni's preaching, even Srila Vyasadeva, the composer of the Bhagavatam, is a recipient of Narad Muni's mercy. Such a person becomes very, very much focused on spiritual life. Now in the case of Maharaj Priyavrat, he had become so focused on spiritual life that he had no interest in continuing a kingdom, in ruling. And so the Lord had to release some extra special weaponry. He had to instruct Lord Brahma, no less, to come down and explain to him that you must engage in this. There is no better ruler than you at the moment. At the moment, the world needs a proper person to take care of it. You are that person. You have had expert spiritual training. You are very qualified to lead people in the right direction. Of course, Priyavrat Maharaj did not want to do this at all. He resisted. But then eventually, he had a difficult task. He had to please Lord Brahma. He had to please Narad Muni also. Both were his seniors. Now, Narad Muni in the presence of Brahma didn't speak up much, because Narad Muni is in one sense subordinate to Brahma. He's a son of Brahma. But Lord Brahma could understand the battle going on, and so he said, yes, if one does one's duty in accordance with the supreme will of the Lord, then that itself is a preventative measure from one becoming entangled. As long as one executes the will of the Lord, and that is their aim in devotional service, such a person remains protected from entanglement. And eventually, after those duties are finished, one can resume that renounced aspect again. Now, Priyavrat Maharaj, although receiving this blessing, of course he did many amazing things. He created an extra sun. You know, darkness was a problem, so he created an extra sun by his potency. There are many descriptions given in the Bhagavatam exactly his achievements in this world. Now, in his particular situation, the instruction coming from Lord Vishnu via Lord Brahma was that there is a specific duty to perform, and therefore you should adopt an ashram which is conducive to that, and you should fulfill your duty properly. Now, at the end of that, Priyavrat Maharaj was thinking, actually, I have spent so long distracted from the goal of life. Of course, he hadn't been, really. He had been engaged in serving the order of the Lord. Yet he himself was thinking, I have spent so long away from the direct service of the Lord that I need to make immediate amends. And so at a certain point, when he handed over the throne, he again adopted a retired life. So it is always the aspiration of even one who is engaged in serving the Lord in the grihastha ashram, or in a specific capacity where one has to interact extensively with the material energy, one is still aspiring to be free from that in the back of their minds, because they know it's dangerous. The service to the Lord is the highest principle, and in the attempt to perform the service of the Lord, one accepts whatever austerities there are. But throughout the Bhagavatam, all the great kings, upon hearing advanced spiritual discourses, their conclusion is not to entangle themselves again in the activities of sense gratification. Their conclusion is to disentangle them externally and internally. So for devotees, the form that the external entanglement takes, that will vary depending on the individual. It is not the case that everyone renounces, becomes a sannyasi, lives in the forest, travels, stays in one place for 3 days. No, Prabhupada gave many practical suggestions as to how this can happen. He said, for our devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement, yes, they can go to the forest. They can go to our centers in Vrindavan and Mayapur. And we will provide facility there, he said. Those who wish to live a retired life, he describes in one purport in the fifth canto, those who wish to live a retired life may go to these centers, take prasadam, practice their spiritual life, and go back home, back to Godhead. So it's not necessary that one changes completely and adopts the external method practiced, that we see in the Bhagavatam, practiced by the saints and the sages. It's the specific form is subject to guidance. That is always done according to guidance with our superiors. But the essential principle is there, that one should try not to repeatedly entangle themselves in those very activities that are bringing them problems. One has to act to free themselves from that. And reading through these examples, these narrations, which are repeated, as I mentioned, many times in the stories, those narrations give us real strength. Because sadly, our tendency is to forget these things. We will read a strong passage like this. We will for some time be thinking that yes, the body is just a lump of stool, ignorance, flesh. What value is it? But practically, what can we do about it? Because as soon as we perhaps walk out of the temple room, perhaps go home, perhaps go for a day at work, the reality of the material world and it's just automatic entanglement means that we may not have this verse in the back of our minds. Well, of course, this verse indicates that we should, Prabhupada actually gives, well, the verse actually explains what we should do in order to achieve the first goal. What is the value of this insignificant body? How much greater is the Supreme Being who is all-pervading like the sky? So our mood, definitely within Krishna consciousness, is not renunciation for its own sake. We give up something in order to get Krishna. That is what we do. That is the purpose. We are not aspiring to be yogis, jnanis, who simply go to some reclusive place, meditate, negate. Negation is not our process. We don't negate the material existence in an attempt to somehow make spiritual progress. We deliberately reduce our material entanglement because it helps us serve Krishna better. Lord Kapiladev explains this to his mother. He explains, Mai anyena bhavena bhaktim kurvanti ye dridam mat krite tyakta karmanas tyakta svajana bandhava. For my sake, my ananyena bhavena, my devotee who is engaged in my devotional service, in deep devotional service, anyena bhavena, bhaktim kurvanti ye dridam, engaged in my devotional service. Mat krite tyakta karmanas tyakta svajana bandhava. For my sake, matkrite, for my activities, he's prepared to give up all his attachments. He's prepared to give up tyakta svajana, his own people, bandhava, his friends. He's prepared to give up his friends, relatives, well-wishers, society, anything. Whatever that person has an attachment to, for the sake of the Lord, he's prepared to give that up. These are the Lord himself's instructions. They cannot really be argued with. But they have to be done very carefully because, of course, in our history there have been many occasions of premature renunciation where someone reads some strong statements like this without having a proper mindset and without having the maturity to deal with that statement, and then they cause great havoc amongst their own family members, amongst society in general. Perhaps if they're studying, they cause havoc in their education fields, in their work areas. This has to be done gradually, carefully, but deliberately. Narad Muni is there. His shelter is available. It's there in the pages of Bhagavatam. And therefore, as we read through the Bhagavatam, we go through the different subjects covered in the Bhagavatam. Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam, Porshanam, Utteha. We go through all these stages. We understand the tattva. We understand the truth, the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. We understand our minimal nature. We understand the Lord's greatness. By actually meditating on the Lord's greatness, we become detached from those other temporary things that we are habituated to being attached to. That is actually the real secret. If we just meditate on how much greater is the Supreme Being, from the pores of his hair follicles come innumerable material universes. Now from the pores of most people's hair follicles come unpleasant smells. These are elements of jnana which can actually really help us. We spend all our days meditating on flesh, the external skin, superficial skin. If you even go 1 millimeter below the surface of the skin, it looks pretty horrible. If you scrape yourself very slightly, it's not nice, and it hurts even more. when that barrier is broken. So we can, the way to give up material life is not to just concoct a whole philosophy whereby we develop a very strong distaste for anything in the world. No, the world is also, an elevated devotee sees the world as full of happiness. Vishvam Purana Sukhayate. Prabodhananda Saraswati, he mentions this. But this is only possible when one has superior philosophy. If the world is as full of happiness, how do we understand that? Given that our philosophy teaches us to be detached from the world. The world is only full of happiness for an advanced practitioner, because he sees the sufferings of this world as conducive elements for him to turn to Krishna. That is the way that this world is full of happiness. Not the world itself directly, in terms of its sensory production. So connecting ourselves to Krishna and his body is always the best way. If we meditate on the form of the Lord, and if eventually the form of the Lord becomes ingrained and deep-seated in our consciousness, then other material forms become insignificant. But our dealings with individuals should not be based on the external form. They should be in terms of that person's consciousness and that person's inner nature, or that person's true essence as the spirit soul. They are all servants of Krishna. They are all very dear to Krishna. So regardless of the external covering, which is really, as you've just read, it will be transformed into insect, stool, or ashes, that's not the basis for the interaction. The basis is that this person is a spirit soul dear to Krishna. And if I am trying to reach the Supreme Father, that Supreme Father is also a father for every other living entity in this world. He's equally dear to him. So if that fact is borne in mind, then our interactions with others also become very easy. It's the secret peace formula that's given. Meditating on the body and engaging in bodily activities, as I mentioned in the verse, causes one becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in many sinful activities. So by not doing that, we save ourselves from sinful activities. When one makes Krishna the center of all sacrifices, Bhaktarama Gita Basam, then there can be real peace. Then the person will not engage in sinful activities because their focus is not the body. So this again is one of those very, very key, essential, strong philosophy verses. But it's important to get that, a good dose of that regularly. Thank you. Are there any questions, comments? I feel very humbled actually speaking in front of Gaurgopal Prabhu and many others whose classes have nourished me for so long, over so many years. But still, I'll beg them for some corrective words, some comments.